And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Sunday night, February 12th, 2017. Two more days to my favorite holiday in the whole year, Jack Benny's birthday.
But I know you're...
There we go.
I did
Thank
it for you. I know you're not the romantic soul, but I'm hoping that somebody you know will benefit from your...
I was born with no romantic bones in my body.
From your worth and love.
This is the WGN Radio Theater Program 154 in the series. And on this particular episode of the WGN Radio Theater, we'll be here 3 hours. Last night, no, not so much.
On 3 hours.
Yeah, we were only on 1.5 hours. And I want to say hi to my co-host, Lisa Wolf. What's
hi,
up,
Carl.
Lisa? I want to say hello to Mike Costella, our executive producer. He is here. Hi.
Hello.
And he is a list.
I'm a list.
He's a list, too.
He's a list.
He's a lot of things.
And then, of course, our producer, Elif Garris, in the booth. Hi, Elif. How are you?
Hi. I'm a little mind blown because I didn't know that the person who voiced our show open was Todd Manley. I knew he did imaging before, but...
Yeah.
I thought that was Mike over there.
Well, we specifically asked Todd to do it for
us. Yeah, Todd.
So it was a gift.
Todd Manley.
Yeah, and he sounds great.
He does. Yeah. Mike could have done it too, though, and so could have Lisa. But Todd did a great job. But Mike does many other things for this show. If it weren't for Mike, these radio programs would not sound as good as they sound. So we want to applaud Mike, but I don't have any sound effects for her.
Thank you. I accept the applause.
So all of these classic radio shows, including the three that we have tonight, The Saint, Fibber McGee and Molly, and Gangbusters, are brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming drama Wonder about a young boy struggling to overcome a facial deformity. And the winner will get a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She was the star of Erin Brockovich.
It's for my boss. He's in this water dispute, and he wants me to find all kinds of papers just from all kinds of places.
All right. Do you know who that actress is? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
And we're back and playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that clip
it's
one more time.
It's for my boss. He's in this water dispute, and he wants me to find all kinds of papers just from all kinds of places.
And we have Pat on the line from Darien. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good.
We're hoping you know that voice.
Julia Roberts.
That is definitely Julia Roberts. Congratulations. You've won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, some of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Our favorite around here at WGN. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Thanks so much. We hope you'll stick with us tonight.
I will, definitely.
Great. Take care.
All right. Very good. It's time for our first classic radio show, Lisa, The Saint. Oh, I love The Saint. You know, it was a television show, of course, with Roger Moore. But first, it was a radio show. There were books, of course, too, novels and things. Leslie Charteris created The Saint. But the radio show, interestingly, starred Vincent Price. And Vincent Price was not English. And this was sort of an English detective. Everybody that played him in the movies and, of course, in the novels, he was supposed to be English. But on the radio show, they did not cast someone like Basil Rathbone or Tom Conway or something like that. They cast an American actor, although he had a very kind of dignified voice, Vincent Price.
Does.
And he plays the saint on this, Simon Templar. Also in this cast is our good pal Shirley Mitchell. She's been on the show many times. She passed away a couple of years ago, but she's been on the show before. This is called Cupid and the Corpse. It's from August 27th, 1950. Here's part one of The Adventures of the Saint.
The Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes transcribed to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as The Saint.
You know something, Simon, darling?
Some things, Anne. Among them, the fact that you're a very disturbing person.
Perhaps that's my answer, then.
Answer to what, may I ask?
Why, you phoned me the moment I returned from Bermuda. I've been wondering why you're going to ply me with a football game, a dinner, and a play.
Oh, why not just relax and enjoy it?
I'd like to. Particularly when I remember that last evening we spent together in Bermuda. Before you had to fly back to the States on some nasty murder business or other.
Yes, that was quite an evening, wasn't it?
Quite.
Do you know you're very beautiful?
I've always enjoyed your thinking so, Simon.
Well, inasmuch as I have a tremendous distaste for murder interfering with moonlight, I now intend to take up where we left off.
At a football game?
Oh, well, it'll be a good game. As a matter of fact, it had better be. The trouble I had digging up tickets for it. Well, here we are, Anne.
My, how things have changed since I was in Bermuda. Imagine they're now holding football games in cigar stores instead of stadiums.
This happens to be Tony Cartago's little establishment. There's an office inside where Tony conducts his main business, which consists of handling bets and scalping tickets.
Oh, you do know the loveliest people, Simon. Yeah,
for which you should offer thanks. We couldn't get any seats to today's game otherwise. Tony has a couple for us.
Oh!
Well, didn't your mother ever tell you that it's not polite to go running into people that way?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I didn't see you. My apologies.
Not bad. Nice manners, too. I wonder why she came tearing out of Tony's that way.
Well, if you're interested, Tony can probably tell you. I wonder where I've seen that girl before.
Oh, in some harpy's huddle, I imagine.
Oh.
Come on, let's go in.
Some place. I bet you couldn't buy cigars in here for love or money.
Well, I'm not sucker enough to lay odds against that. The real business is conducted right in here. Hey, you, Tony. I want you to meet...
Simon!
You better stand back, Anne. My old grandmother would often say, yikes.
Yes, I see. He's been shot, hasn't he?
I'm afraid so. He's still alive, though. Hey, Tony. Tony, who did it? Can you hear me, Tony? Who gunned you?
No, I didn't. Duke, he knows.
It's me, Tony. Templar, who shot you?
Don't know. Barnes effect. Print that.
Oh, Simon, is he?
He is. Well, there's nothing to do but call the police.
Why, Simon, the saint calling in the police on a case? What's happened to you?
It's very simple, Anne. I'm much more interested in a beautiful woman.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, why don't you call them? Oh, a visitor.
Two visitors, darling, a man and a gun.
That phone's getting kind of heavy, ain't it, mister?
The phone? Oh, yes, yes. Come to think of it, it is kind of heavy at that.
I'll take care of it for you. That's better.
You know, you're the second person we've met today who should read Emily Post. Don't you know it isn't polite to point at people, particularly with a gun?
Shut up.
And it's also impolite to tell people...
Shut up.
You see what he means, darling. He wants you to shut up.
Oh, is that it? Yeah. I wondered what he was driving at.
That's very fun.
I'm so glad you liked it. Though I have a better routine that goes like, give me that gun.
Oh, you know what he was friggin' on.
Simon,
just sleeping. Maybe that gun over his head will learn him a thing or two.
But you...
And if you're smart, you won't kick up any fuss. They just as soon kiss you, too.
Kiss me?
Yeah, with the butt of my gun. Now relax, baby.
Simon, wake up, Simon, wake up. Oh, come on, Simon, wake up.
Let's leave a later call.
Oh, Simon.
All right, Anne. Hey, what goes on here? We're tied up.
Yes. Pete thought we'd be more tractable that way.
You know something? He's right. Where are we? How'd we get here?
Pete, he's the guy who conked you. Yeah. And a buddy of his named Louie brought us here. It's a warehouse of some kind. We're in one of the storage bins on the first floor.
Nice. Are we stored away for the winter?
No. No, with a little luck, we'll be out of here in 5 minutes.
Mistaken identity, Ann. I'm not Superman. And these ropes are pretty tight and strong.
Darling, yours may be, but mine aren't. I've had them loose enough to throw off for 15 minutes. I was just waiting for you to wake up.
Well, now, don't tell me you're Superwoman.
No. No, I owe it all to dear, sweet Louie. When I looked at him piteously out of my big blue eyes, he just couldn't tie me up too tightly. I worked myself free while you were sleeping soundly in the corner.
Never again will I underestimate the persuasive powers of women. Now see what you can do about getting me loose.
All right.
There's a little knife in my vest pocket that might help.
This pocket?
Right. Oh, be careful. I'm ticklish.
Oh, I've got it. You know, Simon, I just remembered who that girl was we saw running out of Tony's place.
Yeah? Who is she?
Betty Streeter. She... Ah, there. Yeah. That fixes up your hands.
Thanks. Now, let's have the knife. I'll get my legs loose myself.
Here.
Betty Streeter,
mm-hmm.
The luscious lollipop whose picture's been in the newspapers lately over an engagement or something?
Yes, that's right. She's engaged to Jack Landers, an old boyfriend of mine.
Oh.
Oh, lucky girl. Jack is so handsome and fascinating.
It's very interesting. There. The legs are loose. Now, let's see if I can stand up.
There. How do you feel?
Ooh, outside of that bomb burst in my head and the fact that my legs are apparently cut off at the knee, I...
Simon, someone's coming.
Slip those ropes over you and lie down on the floor, quick.
Okay, Simon.
When he comes in, make with those baby blues and attract his attention for a minute. I'll be behind the door.
And then what?
Well, I won't be dealing a hand of canasta. Quiet now.
Well, hello, Petey. How do you feel?
Fine, baby, fine. Just come back to... Hey, the boyfriend, where is he?
Here I am, Pete, with a peachy keen breath.
Aha! Now that's what I call more like it.
Come on your feet, Ann.
Yes.
I'd better pick up Pete's pop gun. And now let's get out of here.
Now, that's the first sensible thing you've said today. Let's... What's that noise, Simon?
I don't know, but it sounds like my head feels. There's no time to delve into strange noises now, my sweet. Come on, let's go quiet. You know, I wonder if Louie, the other mug, is hanging around.
No. After Pete searched you and didn't find anything, I heard him say he was going to report to the boss.
I guess he's still reporting, then. The place seems deserted. Oh, look, there's the front door. Let's head for it.
Well, it's certainly nice to be out of there.
Yeah. Hey, what was the name of that girl again, Ann?
Girl? Oh, Betty Streeter. Why?
Look at the sign on this building.
Sign? Simon. It says Streeter's Warehouse.
Yeah, that's what it says, doesn't it? Come on, Ann, let's find out what this is all about.
Simon, darling, I thought you were going to call the police.
Ann, darling, that was before Petey hit me over the head with his gun barrel.
Oh, I was afraid of that. Okay, what's our first stop?
First, we find ourselves a nice telephone directory.
May I ask why?
To find out what street the Streeters live on.
Yes, who is... Ann!
Hello, Jack. Remember me?
Remember you? Oh, Ann, sweetheart, if you don't think so, get a load of this.
Mmm. Mmm.
Jack. That's a rather warm greeting after all these years. Oh, yes. Simon, I want you to meet an old friend of mine, Jack Landers. Jack, this is Simon Templer.
Glad to see you, Templer.
But not as glad as you are to see Ed.
Well, not quite.
No.
Come on in.
Thank you.
Yeah, what are you folks doing here, anyhow?
We came to see Betty Streeter. This is where she lives, isn't it?
Betty? Mm-hmm.
Yes, remember the girl you're engaged to?
Oh, sure. Come on along. She's in the living room with her father.
Say, by the way, Landers, have you got a handkerchief?
Handkerchief? Yeah, of course. Why?
Well, I have heard that misplaced lipstick is a better detonator for atomic blasts than plutonium, and before the two gals meet...
Well, maybe you're right, Templar. Well, Betty...
Simon!
Holy smoke, what was that?
Well, either Betty's involved in a premature explosion or they were shots. Come on, let's see.
The living room, Templar, to the left.
I'm with you. Stay back, Anne.
Betty!
Oh, Jack, someone shot at us through the window. Dad's hurt. He
Look
was...
after Mr. Streeter, Jack. I'll take care of the guy at the window.
Well, be careful, Simon. He may still be out there.
Now she tells
Let me get a crack at him, Templar.
Did you get him, Jack?
I think I got him in the leg. He stumbled after the first shot, but he got away in that car.
Well, now that quiet has descended once again, it might be pertinent to inquire as to the state of Mr. Streeter's health.
Oh, it's nothing serious, just a slight flesh wound.
Slight wound, is it? Feels like my whole dad blasted arm has been torn off.
You any idea who was so interested in perforating the Streeter skin, Mr. Streeter?
Yeah, I'll say I have. He was one of...
Dad, there's no need to talk like that now.
Blasted, Betty, there's no reason for me to hide things. That crook's been trying to chisel in on my warehouse business for over a year. He's taken one of them over already.
You couldn't possibly be talking about Duke Raymond, could you?
That's right, Templar. He's threatened Mr. Streeter before. Looks as though he sent one of his gunmen around to enforce that threat.
Oh, you've got to give in to him, Dad. The next time you won't be so lucky. You ought to realize now that he won't stop at anything.
Give in? Nonsense.
I hate to sound mercenary, Mr. Streeter, but how much would it be worth to you to get your skirts cleared of Duke Raymond?
How much would it be worth?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you?
My name's Simon Templer, if that means anything to you.
The saint?
I'll confess it. Does that startle you, Miss Streeter?
Oh, why, no, not at all. I just didn't expect
it. Of course, after all, only sinners need be frightened by saints. Well, Mr. Streeter, what do you say?
All right, I'll make you an offer. $10,000 if you get Duke Raymond out of the way. Nothing if you don't.
You've just made yourself a deal.
Simon, you taking money for a case?
Well, juries award damages for broken hearts, Anne. And you have no idea how badly I feel about letting Cupid down.
See, Mike only shows up when the breaks are on music. He doesn't show up when they're on a knock of a door in the middle of a sentence because he knows he's going to get...
He's going to get what? What are you going to do to him?
He's going to get
it. You're
going to
give him a spanking?
Bang, zoom, to the moon, Alice. Yeah. I saw, what do they call those things when people text you something and it's a picture? Is it, what is that called?
Like an emoji?
Yeah. Well, not an emoji, but it's like an actual picture or something like that. And it was a joke. And it was
a meme.
Okay. It was a picture of the moon.
Right.
And then there were astronauts looking at the moon. And one astronaut says to the other astronaut, is that Alice Cramden? You know, because there was a
cute
woman on the moon, like laying on the moon.
To the
I thought
moon.
That was really funny.
That is cute.
All right. So that's the first portion of The Adventures of the Saint from August 27th, 1950. Cupid and the Corpse, starring the one and only Vincent Price. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes here. But... All right. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. It is 11:36 here on a Sunday night.
Night.
Yeah. At 12 o'clock, we'll say morning.
We're usually
I'm starting
a little
to get,
confused.
It's only been 154 shows. I'm starting to get the hang of it now.
I don't think you are.
It's night for the first hour, and then it's morning for the second 2 hours, because we're on from 11 to 2, right?
It's whatever you say, Carl. Eh. That's what's right.
Okay. You know what?
Hmm.
In just an hour, or less than an hour, it will be Monday. And you know what happens every Monday to those who have subscribed?
I sure do.
To freeradioclassics.com.
It's a really big day for all of us classic radio lovers because
yeah.
we get a free classic radio embedded in an email sent from Mr. Carl Amari himself. I mean, not that you're
well,
typing everybody's email
yeah.
in yourself, but it does come from you. And I do look forward to it.
Here's how this
every
came
Monday.
About. Lisa and I and Mike and Elif, we were all talking one day And we were probably at lunch, and I ended up paying because they have arms the size of alligator arms, the three of them. And so we were sitting around, and I knew the check was coming, and I just thought, you know, I might as well be also generous to our listeners and send them each a classic radio show every week. They like classic radio. They're listening to this show, right? So let's thank them for listening to the show. Let's send them an email that has a classic radio show embedded in the email every single week, 52 of them a year.
Well, maybe they, too, would appreciate a nice lunch out. I'm just saying, this Howls and Hood was delicious. Thank you. You took me out for lunch this week. It was so good.
So listen to this, Mike and
Alice. This is a true story.
Okay, this is a true story, right? So
I'm in my Uber.
Well, wait, we had a meeting with Stephanie. We have our meeting every, you know.
So often.
it's supposed to be every month. It ends up being every couple of months. And so I'm early, of course. I'm always early. I was an hour early.
He's crazy.
So I went next door to Howl and Hood's.
He got there like the night before. He's waiting for the meeting, so he wouldn't be late.
And,
did you pitch a tent outside of the building?
No. I'm waiting for Lisa to get there. Our meeting was at 2 o'clock. I'm waiting for Lisa, you know, and she's in an Uber, I don't know what, and it's literally, I would say,
it's 1:30.
Yeah, it was like 1:30.
It's exactly 1:30.
1:30. She's right. Like, I'm hungry. She texts me, I'm hungry.
That's true.
And you have to know Lisa, okay? Lisa doesn't carry any money with her. She carries no cash with her, ever. Okay,
I do have credit cards.
I know you have a credit card, but you never have any cash.
That's true.
So when she says I'm hungry, that means will you buy me food? That's code for will you buy me something. So I said, yeah, I'm at Howl and Hood's, right? So can you get me a turkey burger? I get a turkey burger. I get the bill. It's like $17 for her turkey burger.
Oh my!
Plus tax and tip.
I'm not kidding you.
It's like $25 to have lunch.
The food is really good there.
It was delicious.
It's really good. She was talking about it 2 days later how good it was. But wow!
Yeah, but
$17 for a turkey burger.
But am I worth it?
Let's now listen to the conclusion. Well, let's get real quick before we get back to the Saint. That email that we were talking about, folks. If you want to subscribe, go to freeradioclassics.com, freeradioclassics.com, and you'll get an email every Monday from me, too.
Lunch is not free, but free radio classics are free.
All right, let's get back now to the Saint.
Well, Miss Morley, this is our famous riverfront. How do you like it?
I don't.
Now, there's the spot we're heading for. Do you see it?
Well, I see some speedboats moored at a dock, if that's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Any particular reason for coming here?
The usual reason. We're going for a little boat ride. How much for the ride, buddy?
12 miles out, 12 miles back for a buck.
That's fair enough. Come on, Ann, let's get in.
You know, the more I think about this, Simon, the crazier I think you are. Why would anyone want to travel 12 miles out into the ocean?
To see Duke Raymond, of course.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing Father Neptune on top of a wave, I presume.
Not exactly. You'll see when we get out there. And I'll expect a great big apology for those words when we get back.
You mean if you get back, don't you, Temple?
Simon!
Yeah, I see. That man's here again. Tell me, Petey, my friend, what are you doing here? Are you coming along for a ride?
That's right, pal.
You know, after paying a buck for 12 miles out and 12 miles back, I think I've got a right to be particular about the kind of company I have.
Well, don't let it bother you, pal. This gun in my hand makes us equals. Besides, you better pay only half a buck.
Why only half a dollar, Petey?
Because it's cheaper by the dozen, right, Petey?
Yeah, you'll get the idea, pal. You may be going 12 miles out, but I don't think you're ever coming back.
Pete, this ride hasn't been very comfortable so far. That gun sticking in my back irritates me.
Yeah, too bad, isn't it?
Sympathetic soul, aren't you? Well, the ride's nearly over. There's Duke Raymond up ahead.
That's funny. I don't see anything but an old freighter out there.
That's it, lady, the Black Deuce.
The Black Deuce? Quaint name, isn't it?
It's a quaint ship. Gambling is the specialty.
And I always thought that was against the law.
Not when you're 12 miles out and you're Duke Raymond, it isn't. You see,
Simon, isn't that a cabin cruiser coming up behind us?
Yeah, it's coming up fast, too, and no lights on.
I don't like that. Don't like it at all.
Oh, don't worry, Pete. It's just pulling ahead of us.
I guess. Hey, what do you think you're doing?
Simon, the boat's turned toward us. It's going to run into us.
Take it easy. Look out! You're going to ram us! You're going to...
You doing, Ann?
Oh, all right. So far. But not much far.
Just a couple of more strokes will do it. Keep it up. There we go. Just two more now. There.
Phew. Oh, I thought we'd never get here.
Must have been telepathy. Oh. Wait a minute. I'll climb on board. Okay, now that does it. Okay, now give me your hand.
Okay, Simon.
Easy does it.
Well, quite an experience, I'd say. Where are we?
We're in a speedboat moored to the Black Deuce. Which reminds me it's time to go to work.
Oh, you're not actually going aboard that ship, are you?
That was my original intention, wasn't it? Besides, Pete and his boyfriend will drown if I don't get help out to him.
Oh, and you've got to earn that $10,000, as I know.
You're right as usual, Angel. Now, listen closely. Do you know how to run a speedboat?
Yes, I do. Why?
Well, I've got a funny idea you're going to have to run one in a very few minutes. Hi, Duke.
Who are you?
I'm Simon Pemper, the man Pete was supposed to bring in. Pardon the wet clothes, this damp sea air, you know.
Where's Pete?
The last time I saw him, he was hanging onto a wrecked speedboat a couple of hundred yards away.
Hanging onto him? Come on, get down to cases, Templar. What's the racket?
Duke, I have a funny hunch you're going to lay off Streeter's business.
Am I? What makes you think so?
A possible murder rap?
You're talking, Templar.
Tony Cartago was bumped off. Why?
You're so smart, you ought to know.
Maybe I do. I'd guess it was because he knew too much about bonds.
Bonds?
Yeah, you know, securities, negotiable ones worth a lot of dough.
Where'd you get that idea?
From Tony. He talked before he died. He mentioned you and bonds.
Tony always talked too much. You talk too much, too.
Yeah, I'm beginning to get what you mean.
I thought you would.
You know, Duke, there you are, sitting behind that desk with a gun in your hand. I wonder.
You wonder what?
I wonder how you'd look with that desk on top of you. Too bad, Duke. You missed me. Sorry, I can't do the same. Well, imagine that. Duke Raymond sleeping during business hours. You'll never get ahead that way, old boy. Horatio Alger would positively frown upon you. Nice going, Ann. Thank you kindly for picking me up out of the water.
If I'd known what was going to happen, I wouldn't have. When I saw you dive off that rail and all those people started shooting at us.
Oh, just a necessary unpleasantness, my sweet. I had to get some information from Duke about bonds.
Bonds? You going to play the market?
Right now, I'm playing the field. There's a murderer in it. And I'm going to start at Mr. Streeter's warehouse.
Is over to the left, Simon.
Sure, but we're going next door.
And just what do you expect to find there, Sherlock?
A printing press, of course. There, you see? The Travers Printing Company.
Well, I see it, but I can't understand it. How did you know this place was here, and why look for a printer?
Tony Cartago told me to look for one just before he died. And as for this place, you remember the thumping noise we heard as we were leaving the warehouse?
Why, of course. It was made by a printing press.
Sure, that's what I thought. Well, shall we go in?
At this hour? But it's so dark, nobody will be in there.
Two facts would impress me no end.
Now, let me see. I should have some keys in my pocket.
Why bother? That door's already partially open.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh. This is black as pitch in here.
Yeah, I can't risk a light until we're sure it's empty.
There's a crack of light over there.
Yeah.
It seems to come from a doorway into another room. I wonder if... Oh.
What's the matter?
I hit my foot against something. Something soft.
You don't say. Suppose you look up at the ceiling while I shine this pencil flash down.
Oh, Simon.
Perfectly expressed.
He's dead, isn't he?
Well, if he's not, he ought to be. He's been tied up, gagged, strangled, and shot in the leg.
Who is he?
I think he's the gentleman who tried to kill Mr. Streeter.
Well, how do you...
Because Jack shot him in the leg, remember? He's probably Mr. Travers the printer.
What is it, Simon? Why'd you turn off the light?
Because that light in the other room just went out, and I hate to be a nonconformist.
Where are you going?
I'm going to step over there and see what's up.
Oh, be careful. Simon! Simon, are you all right?
I'm not sure, but I'll risk it. I'm going after him.
Oh, look out, Simon. He's a killer. What is it?
Oh,
what's wrong?
Whoever it was locked and bolted this door, I'll have to kick it down.
Someone may still be in there.
You have the most pessimistic thoughts. Now wait till I find the light switch.
Well, nobody's here. He must have gone out that window.
And if I hadn't been idiot enough to bump into something in the dark, this case might have been over by now.
Either that or you'd have been dead. What's that funny hissing sound?
That? Oh, it's the flame under that lead pot over there.
What's cooking?
Oh, printers use them to melt their old linotype slugs in.
Yes, but why would that be going now? Do you think the killer left...
There was a reason I wanted you along tonight. You've just hit it. Look, there's the type.
Yes?
And see those engraved copper and zinc plates on that work table?
Mm-hmm.
If we'd come in a few minutes later, they'd have been in that lead pot.
But what are they?
Oh, not so good at reading upside down and backwards, but... 6% debentures, state of secured... Highway taxes. So that's it. What?
Would you mind explaining, Simon?
Later, darling. First, I've got a little surprise party to prepare.
Surprise party?
Yeah. As soon as I remove the handkerchief gag from Mr. Travers, send a message to Duke Raymond, and make a few phone calls, we'll go to the scene of the party.
How nice. Now, what's going to happen there?
What usually happens at a surprise party?
Oh, don't tell me. I know. One very foxy murderer is going to get a great big surprise. So the surprise party is going to be at Tony Cartago's place.
Right you are, Ann. There it is now.
What's going to happen, Simon? All I know is that you called a lot of people in a disguised voice and told them something about Bonds and Tony's. Why?
Well, if you'll look inside the cigar store, what do you see?
Well, there's a light inside.
Correct. And that must mean one of the guests has arrived. Look quiet as we go in. I want to see if that's an early bird or a worm.
Seems to be awfully busy looking for something.
Well, let's help the poor soul find it. Hello, Betty.
Oh!
What's the matter, Betty? Looking for some bonds?
Bonds?
The ones you were called about this morning?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Tut, Betty, that'll never do. However, I wasn't the one who called you this morning.
How did you know about that?
May we join the party?
Jack!
Hello, dear.
Right, Templar, what's this all about?
Hello, gentlemen. Nice of you to come, Mr. Streeter. Jack, I was just talking to Betty about that phone call of this morning. What did your caller say, Betty? Something about your father's life being endangered over some bonds and that you'd better get down here fast to save him?
My life in danger? What kind of nonsense is that?
It wasn't nonsense to Betty. She came down here all right. We walked in right after Betty left and found Tony Cartago dead.
Now, just a minute. You're making a pretty dangerous accusation there, Templar.
Happens to be true. Mr. Streeter, Duke Raymond forced you to sell him that warehouse next to the Travers Printing Company, didn't he?
Yes. And it took a lot of force. He ruined the business by destroying merchandise, wrecking trucks, the usual racketeering methods.
I had to sell to stop losing money.
Maybe you better not talk so much, Slater.
Yeah. Maybe it won't be healthy.
Well, more gas. Duke, Raymond, and Pete.
Yeah, that's right, Sapler. What gives here?
Well, now, that's a rather silly question, Duke. You came here looking for bonds, didn't you?
So your message was a frame, eh, chum?
Only in a manner of speaking, chum. Someone in this room owed you money from gambling, didn't they, Duke? And promised to pay in negotiable securities to be left until called for here at Tony Cartego's.
It's your story, Templer. Keep talking.
But when Pete came to pick up the bonds for you, they were missing, and Tony was dead. It's lucky for you, too. If you tried to sell those bonds, you'd have been arrested. They were forgeries.
Phonies? You sure about that?
I know it, and I can prove it.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
What do you think of your gambling friend now, Duke?
The dirty double-crosser. With all that dough in the family, too. Oh, low-down rat is going to get...
No, you don't, Duke. Stop right there.
Simon, he's got a gun.
Isn't that strange, Anne? I was thinking the same thing.
Jack. Oh, no, Jack, not you.
Pretty sharp, aren't you, Templer? Got it all figured out.
Oh, I've been known to get around Landers. Anyway, it was rather obvious. Particularly after you kissed Anne.
After he kissed me? What did that have to do with it?
Well, you see, Anne...
I got something to say first.
Pete, you...
Simon. He's dead.
Yes, good old Pete. He never misses.
There, my dear.
Thanks for keeping him busy while I went for my gun, Tim.
Oh, think nothing of it, Pete. And to show my appreciation...
Here.
What? What's the big idea, sir?
Duke, let's not be hasty, shall we? I've got a gun, too, the one I borrowed from you aboard your ship. Get on the phone, Ann. Call the police.
You bet, Simon. Right away.
As for you, Mr. Streeter, get out your checkbook. The amount is $10,000 payable to your favorite charity. Your friend Duke Raymond won't bother you again for a long, long time. Would you like another drink, Anne?
No, thank you, Simon. I suppose I should thank you for a lovely day.
It had its points, but the football game might have been more exciting.
I doubt it. But I still need some answers.
Don't you see, Anne? Jack was terrified when he couldn't pay Duke the huge gambling debt he owed him. So he hit on the idea of forging bonds. He had Travers print them.
But I still don't understand why he killed Travers.
Well, he had to make sure that Travers wouldn't talk. So when Jack went to the print shop to destroy the evidence of the forged plates, he destroyed Travers, too.
Yes, but why was Tony killed?
Tony held the bonds for Duke. But when he discovered they were forged, he called the Streeter home.
Yes.
Betty got the message and hurried down to see what it was all about. She thought Tony was talking about her father.
And Jack was there, overheard the conversation, and beat her to Tony.
Right.
And he tried to kill us with a cruiser to stop us from getting Duke's story.
Mm-hmm. He was a busy little man.
Okay, mastermind. I guess I've got it. Except for that crack about the kiss. How come you knew Jack Landers was guilty because he kissed me?
Lipstick, Anne.
What? Lipstick?
Yeah. You see, after you kissed him, he had lipstick all over his face. Yeah. When I called it to his attention, he wiped it off with his handkerchief. And the handkerchief that gagged Travers had lipstick on it, too.
Oh. And to think that just because he kissed me, he's dead.
I wouldn't feel that way about it if I were you. Your kisses wouldn't kill anyone, and I can prove it.
Can you, Simon?
Sure. Watch. There, you see?
I guess you're right.
Oh, please don't agree so quickly, Anne.
Why not?
I'm seriously considering making a lifetime work out of proving it.
Listening to another transcribed adventure of the Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now here's our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, in tonight's cast, you heard Shirley Mitchell, Barbara Eiler, Jack Moyles, Tom Brown, Edmund McDonald, and Anthony Barrett. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of the Saint. Good night.
That's the Adventures of the Saint, August 27th, 1950, Cupid and the Corpse, starring Vincent Price. Okie dokie, hour two. Thanks for staying up late with us. This is the WGN Radio Theater with Lisa Wolf and Elif Garris. And Mike left the building. He's got other things to do, you know. He's A-list.
Some people have to sleep. It's after midnight. Now, we don't.
No.
We are all prepared for this show.
It's because we, like...
We're superhuman.
We're on Walking Dead. We just walk around.
talk for yourself there. Aleph and I took a nap.
Uh-huh.
Not together. Just saying.
Okay, won't touch
no
that
comment.
One. We'll not touch that one. Fibber McGee and Molly coming up this hour. Also, Gangbusters. So a lot more classic radio coming your way here on the WGN Radio Theater, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actress stars in the upcoming comedy Snatched, about an unexpected adventure when a vacation goes wrong.
Hmm.
And the winner gets a pair of tickets to see the Apollo Chorus of Chicago. This is on Saturday, February 25th at the Wentz Concert Hall in Naperville.
It's a musical?
It's a musical. They perform Bach's Mass B and B minor.
Mm.
So it's a chorus.
Okay.
It's a chorus performance.
312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress starred in Private Benjamin.
I think they sent me to the wrong place.
Uh-huh.
See, I did join the army, but I joined a different army.
Uh-huh.
I joined the one with the condos and the private rooms.
All right. That's a good army, that one.
That's the one.
The condos, private rooms.
Right.
312-981-7200. Who is that actress? We'll find our winner after these words.
All righty, we are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I think they sent me to the wrong place.
Uh-huh.
See, I did join the army, but I joined a different army.
Uh-huh.
I joined the one with the condos and the private rooms.
That sounds like it's more up my alley right there. We are going to talk to Barbara from Wakanda. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. We're hoping you know that actress. I think she's so darn cute.
Goldie Hawn.
She is Goldie Hawn. Do you like her? Are you a fan of Goldie Hawn?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
I think everybody is. And so,
I know Kurt Russell is.
Kurt Russell's a fan of hers.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I'm a fan of his. We all love each other. It's one big happy family. You have won a pair of tickets to see the Apollo Chorus of Chicago. It's one of the most legendary musical organizations. They perform Bach's Mass in B minor. This is on Saturday, February 25th at the Wentz Concert Hall in Naperville. Carl, this is their 145th season of the Apollo Chorus. That's amazing.
Wow.
You can check it out at brownpapertickets.com, but you have won a pair of tickets. So, Barbara, thank you for calling in, and we hope you love the show.
Thank you for the tickets, and yes, I love your show.
Oh, no, well, that show, too. And then we're and I hope you love the Apollo Chorus as well, but we hope you love our show.
Thanks,
more.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thank you. All right, it is 12:15 on a Monday morning, and it's time for Fibber, McGee, and Molly. This is a show called Early to Bed, which makes sense at 12:15 in the morning here. This is going back to February 18th, 1941. Jim and Marianne Jordan star now. Part one of Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber, McGee, and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with It's High Time. Ladies and gentlemen, through the courtesy of Johnson's Wax, we bring you the more or less correct time. At Ida, Idaho, it's 7:32 and a half, Rocky Mountain time. At Chau, Maine, it is 9:32 and three quarters, Eastern time. At Umsky, Siberia, it's still yesterday. And at 79 Wistful Vista, it's time we dropped in on Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Hello.
Hey, Molly, you know what time it is?
No, does it matter?
Well, it does to me, on account of you know what I'm going to do.
Dearie, if I could ever foresee what you're going to do, I'd be one of those happy mediums people are always striking. What you going to do?
I'm going to go to bed.
What, at 8:30 in the evening?
Yep.
Don't you feel well, McGee?
Feel wonderful. Now, I'll feel better after one good solid night's sleep. You know, early to bed and early to rise, and you don't need to call any red caps to carry them bags under your eyes.
But my goodness, McGee, for years now I've been trying to get you to go to bed earlier, and now, well, why, I'm dumbfoundered. What's got into you?
Well, I just got to thinking that us being on the Lux Theater program next week and all, we ought to cut out this staying up late.
Say, that's a good idea. We'll go to bed right now.
Okay.
It's only 8:30, and if we get up at 7, that's a good 10 hours sleep.
10 hours. Wow. Why, I'll leap out of bed in the morning ready to whip my weight in...
field mice.
Be that as it may or may not be or not. Now, whoever this is, watch me give him the brush off. I want to get to bed. Come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hello there, little girl. What you want now? I can't take much time to dilly-dally. I want to get to bed early, I do.
Why?
Well, I just think it'll do me good, that's why. I've always been a late stayer-upper, so for once I'm going to be a early goer to bedder.
Well, personally, mister, I'm a take-a-nap in the afternooner.
Well, that's good, too. Builds up your resistance. You got to have a lot of resistance to go through a winter, you know.
Well, gee, Mr. McGee, when will summer be here? When will it? I want to use my new roller skates.
Well, you can't rush these things, sis. We can't have summer until the pixies get their reservoirs all filled up. You mean to stand there with your little nose between your eyes and tell me you ain't heard about the pixies?
I haven't, I betcha.
Well, I think you're old enough to know about these things, sis.
Now, be careful, McGee.
You see, when the snow melts, it soaks into the ground, and the pixies gather it all up into a big reservoir way down deep under the earth. Then when summer comes, the pixies fill their little squirt guns full of water out of the reservoir and squirt it onto the roots of the flowers and plants so they'll grow, you see? And we can't have summer till they gather enough water. Look at that little face light up, Molly. Well, sis, does that answer your question?
Sure it does, I bet you. But what about the equinox?
Equinox? What are they?
Well, the equinox is an astronomical term to denote those periods of the year which usher in the spring and fall season.
Yeah, but what I was talking...
An equinox is when the sun's center crosses the equator,
huh?
And is either of two points where the celestial equator intersects the ecliptic.
Yeah, but what...
And if that's too tough for you, you can go back to the pixie.
You hear that, Molly? That kid has got a great IQ, hasn't she?
What's an IQ?
An infuriating quality. And speaking of infuriating quality, that reminds us, is Uncle Dennis in yet?
Oh, he's been in all evening, dearie.
Huh?
Why, you can hear him in the other room. Listen.
Is that Uncle Dennis?
Yes.
What's he doing?
Taking a cat nap. Now, come on and turn out the lights. You got the alarm clock?
Yeah, is this the correct time? 9:22?
Yes, it is. And we've lost a half an hour's sleep already, McGee.
Oh,
we better hurry. And don't forget now to...
What is this, a conspiracy?
Looks like the Sandman is going to be left holding the bag tonight. Come in.
How do you do, Mrs. McGee? And Mr. McGee.
Hi, Effie.
Will you help me?
Help? Don't tell me you've lost that diamond necklace again, Abigail.
Have you looked under all your chins, Uppie?
Please, Mr. McGee. It's my automobile.
Well, it couldn't be under your chin.
It broke down right in front of your house.
Oh, well, I'm sure McGee will be glad to run out and get it started for you, won't you, dearie?
Oh, Dad, Ratted, I don't want to do that. We were going to go to bed.
Oh, never mind, Mr. McGee. Perhaps I should get someone who thoroughly understands what they're doing.
Hey, wait a minute, Uppie. Who says I don't understand automobiles? Why, I was an expert mechanic when General Motors was a corporal.
Oh, but Mr. McGee?
Why, half the developments in the modern motor are my inventions, Uppy.
Oh, indeed. Well, if you were the one who invented the automobile radio that goes dead while passing under a viaduct, congratulations, it's very restful.
That wasn't mine, but I spent 4 years as chief mechanic at the Biggs Body Works.
Yes, he did.
You should have seen the laboratory and workshop old man Biggs gave me just to tinker around in. Biggs Tinker McGee, I was known as. Biggs Tinker McGee, the brawny and brainy Bonaparte of benzene buggy blacksmiths, busy as a beaver, bright as a beacon at bolt and bumper brackets on bus bodies, boosted as the best boss in the business at boring bronze bearings and bolt boilers, bringing back the bacon as the boss of the brake band, bumblebee of the brace and bit, and big bullfrog of the brass bicycle bell bonders, a breezy, brilliant bozo for budding boys to copy, but excuse me while I go to work on Uppington's jalopy.
McGee, it's 1:30. Aren't you ready for bed yet?
I'm still trying to get the grease off my hands that I got off of Uppy's car.
Oh, dear.
It's a fine state of how do you do. Here I try to go to bed early, and what happens? I spend 3 hours out there fixing a car at 15 above zero.
Did you find the trouble?
Yes, finally. No gasoline. Hand me my bathrobe, will you, Molly?
Here you are, dearie.
Thanks. You ready for bed?
Well, I will be as soon as I finish brushing my hair. 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 100. There.
What, you got any hair left on your head? The way you slap away at it with that brush every night, I'd...
Why, that makes it grow more.
Oh, yeah?
Why, certainly. Yeah. Your father used to use a hairbrush on you, didn't he?
Yeah.
And look how you developed.
Okay, never mind. Well, just as soon as I get...
McGee. What's that?
No.
Sounded like a prowler on the front porch.
Uh-oh.
Go see who it is. No, wait, I'll go with you.
Well, all right. Oh, it's probably just a cat. I hope. Come on.
Say, if that's a cat, McGee, somebody's taught him how to use a flashlight and a bunch of keys.
Must be a hep cat. I'll be quiet, Molly, and I'll catch this guy red-headed. Red-handed. One, two... Three. Ah, I caught you in the act, didn't I, Bud? Now, suppose you...
Why, McGee, it's Mr. Boomer.
Ah, good evening, my dear. And a nasty nocturnal nip up to you, nutpick.
What you doing on our front porch at this time of night, Boomer?
Just checking up to see that your front door was locked. Sleepy, slappy, and sloppy. Checking all the front doors in the neighborhood. Yes, yes.
A likely story, Mr. Boomer. We already have a night watchman in this neighborhood.
Of course you have, my dear. But I'm helping him out tonight. After he met with an accident.
Oh.
Accident? What accident?
Seems he bumped himself on a pair of brass knuckles. I would have run to his rescue, but I was several inches away at the time. Very regrettable. Yes, indeed.
Say, Mr. Boomer, you can find more ways of getting into people's house than a cold draft.
You wrong me, my dear. I'm a phony body, a bony Friday night watchman. Let me show you my star. Now, what did I do with that star?
Where is it?
Star. Here's a large dental mirror for looking gift horses in the mouth. Dress shirt badly scorched when my laundress walked out on me. Yes, yes. She decided to strike while the iron was hot. Here's a postcard from Sheila the shoplifter. Says she took a Greyhound bus to Chicago. But they made her bring it back. Here's a photograph of Badger Game Bessie in a bathing suit. You ought to see her dive in Toledo. Ah, what's this? Oh, yes. Payment for a ball player I sold to the Cincinnati Reds. See?
Huh?
A check for a short star.
Oh.
Well, imagine that. No star. How did I happen to miss that? He must have had it pinned inside his vest, the double crosser. Well, good night, my dear, and to you, Gorkworth.
It's odd, ain't it, Molly, that a guy like Boomer who don't know a note of music is going to wind up someday as a conductor?
Musical?
No, electrical. Now, come on, let's get to bed. What time is it?
Well, it's almost 2 o'clock.
Wow.
And we started to go to bed at 8:30.
Well, maybe we couldn't have got to sleep that easy early anyway.
Oh, dear.
I'm sure sleep now. I'm so sleepy.
Heavenly days now, what?
Let the dead reddest. Can't we have a moment's peace in our own house of all the...
Oh, my. Guess I better answer that we'll never get a night's sleep. 79 Molly McGee, Wistful Vista speaking. I mean...
Well, hello, Molly. This is Harlow Wilcox. Sorry to disturb you folks, but can you tell me how to spell indispensable?
McGee, Mr. Wilcox wants to know how to spell indispensable.
Give me that phone. See how dramatic I did that? I'm practicing up for Lux next week.
They were going to be on the Lux Radio yep. Theater the following week, Lisa. That's,
and that was our friend Harlow Wilcox.
Harlow Wilcox, that's right. Fib McGee and Molly, part one. That's from February 18th, 1941. Early to bed, Jim and Marion Jordan. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. Well, you know what, Lisa?
It's Mardi Gras music.
You know, I'm really excited. I don't know if I... Did I mention this to you, Lisa? I am writing a coffee table book on classic radio. Did you know that? Did I tell you about this?
You sure did. But, yeah. I mean, that's right up your alley.
Aleph, did you know this?
Who's editing it for you?
I had no idea.
You know what? It's the same group publisher that puts out or distributes all of the Bill O'Reilly books.
Yeah.
You know, the Killing Jesus, Killing Rising Sun, all that. That same distributor is releasing this book that
I'm
doing.
Well, who's writing it for you?
I'm writing it.
No, but who's writing it for you?
You are so funny. You know, you're so funny I forgot to laugh.
Oh, you don't have a ghostwriter?
No. I'm writing. And you know what the book? It's going to be called something like The 100 Greatest Classic Radio Shows of All Time. And I'm going to talk about the 100 greatest shows, and then you'll actually be able to go to the website and download as part of when you buy the book. It's not going to be expensive either. I think it's going to be like $30-something dollars. It's a big hardcover coffee table book. And then when you go to the website, you're able to actually download about 60 or 70 of them.
So when do you expect to have
this
published?
It'll be out this year. I'm working
really?
On it right now. I'm about halfway done.
That's very admirable.
It's going to be cool. But speaking of writing, I write an article every issue of Remind Magazine. And I'm telling you, folks, I think you'll love this magazine. 50-page magazine, and it's got all kinds of stuff about nostalgia, crossword puzzles, all kinds of cool things. And the magazine is available at all Barnes & Nobles and Walmart stores. But you can go to their website, remindmagazine.com, and save about 60% off the newsstand price. So check it out. I think you'll really like Remind Magazine. All right, time now for the conclusion to Fibber McGee and Molly.
Hello, Wilcox. What's the idea of waking us up in the middle of the night?
Oh, now, wait a minute, Fibber. I have to get a sales letter in the mail first thing tomorrow, and I can't spell indispensable because you borrowed my dictionary and never returned it. Look it up for me, will you, pal? Indispensable.
Indis-what?
Indispensable. You know, like Johnson's Wax is indispensable to a well-kept floor and in the protection of furniture and woodwork.
Oh, indispensable. Well, that's spelled why don't you use the word necessary? Like saying, to keep your home spotless and gleaming, Johnson's Wax is necessary.
Say, great idea. Necessary it is. Now, let's see. That's with 2 C's and 1 S, isn't it?
No, I think it's with 1 C and 2 S's. Hey, Molly, how do you spell necessary?
Give me that phone. Hello, Mr. Wilcox. What did you want to know?
Is necessary with 1 S and 2 C's?
Is what necessary with 1 S and 2 C's?
Look, Molly, I'm trying to point out that in order to give lasting beauty and protection to floors and furniture, Johnson's Wax is necessary.
Why don't you say indispensable?
That's the word I want. Thanks, beautiful. Indispensable, the very thing. Hey, how do you spell indispensable?
Wait a minute. Hey, McGee, how do you spell indispensable?
I don't know.
Well, look it up.
Well, what in?
Mr. Wilcox's dictionary.
Okay, but you'll have to wait till I get it.
Where is it?
It's right here in the hall closet. Gotta straighten out that closet one of these days.
King's Men sing In the Gloaming.
In the gloaming, oh my darling, when the lights are dim and low, and the quiet shadows falling, softly come and softly go. When the winds are sobbing faintly, will a gentle unknown know? Will you think of me and love me as you did once long?
McGee, it's after 4 o'clock and you haven't had a wink of sleep.
I had to throw all that stuff back in that hall closet, didn't I? I'll be ready as soon as I brush my teeth.
Oh, what was that?
I knocked a couple of bottles off the medicine shelf. I'm so sleepy, I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, I'll clean it up in the morning, dearie. In the meantime, don't step in any broken glass.
I already did.
What? Oh, dear, let me see.
No,
what
it's all right, it's all right. I stepped in some iodine, too. What a night. Tomorrow night, I'm going to put a smallpox sign on the door and start going to bed at 5 o'clock. I'll move over, Molly. Here I come. And believe me, I'm sure. Oh, that rabbit. Who put that cedar chest there?
You did, 6 years ago.
Well, I must be off the beam. Boy, it's cold in here. We got enough blankets on that bed?
Plenty, but get in now before you catch cold.
Okay. Hot dog, at last. I'm so tired, I could...
McGee.
Huh?
You forgot to turn the light off in the bathroom.
Hey, I'll flip you a coin to see who gets up and turns it out.
All right, you got a coin?
Well, I got one right here in my pants pocket. Oh, it's over there on the chair. Wait a minute. Okay, Molly, I got a 2-bit piece here. You call heads or tails.
Say, as long as you're up, why don't you turn off the light?
I never thought of that. Okay.
Oh, my.
Ah, boy, does this bed feel good. Yeah, good night, Molly.
Good night, dearie.
Hey. Hey, Molly.
Yeah?
There's a fire someplace. You want to go to a fire?
No.
Me either. At my age, I ain't going to chase any more fires.
No, or anything else.
Huh?
Never mind. Good night.
Good night.
Enough room, dearie?
Mm-hmm. Good night.
Night.
It's Gildersleeve. That dirty. I'll teach him to ruin a guy's sleep. Where's my slippers? Oh, here they are. That thoughtless, selfish, unthinkable so-and-so can't ruin my night. Oh! I wish that cedar chest had quit crawling around the floor and stay in one place.
Oh, McGee!
That ratted Gildersleeve, what's the idea of beating our door in at this hour of the night? You ought to be ashamed. A guy your age out hooting all night. Why, if you had an ounce of decency...
Oh, wait a minute, McGee. I just wanted to ask you for the keys to your car.
Oh, that's all, eh? Hey, Molly.
Yeah?
You know what this big baboon has got the unirrigated gall to ask me? He wants the keys to our car. Gildersleeve, you got more brass than the Marine Band. I got a good notion to pop you one right on top of you.
Now, look here, McGee. I was just trying to do you a favor.
A fine favor. Waking me up at this hour of the night.
I just woke up myself.
Huh?
I woke up and happened to look out the window, and there was your car standing outside.
Oh.
I knew you'd forgotten to put it in the garage, and I was afraid it would freeze up.
Oh.
So I was going to put it away for you.
Well, gee, that was a pretty night. I mean, well, that's pretty white of you.
I'm white, all right, chum. I'm frostbitten. Now, you give me your keys and go on back to bed.
Here, Gildy, and I'm sorry I popped off at you. You're really a great guy.
Oh. You don't mean that, McGee.
Yes, I do, Gil. You're the best friend I ever had.
Really, little chum?
You betcha. Why, there ain't anything you could ask me to do that I wouldn't do for you, my buddy.
Nothing at all?
Nothing. Just ask me. That's all. Just ask me.
All right. I will, McGee.
Mm-hmm.
Take these keys and put that jalopy away yourself. Good night, buddy.
Why, that mealy-mouthed double-crossing...
McGee, come to bed before you catch cold.
Okay, I'm coming. You know what Gildersleeve just done? He wanted to... Oh! That rat, that cedar chest!
Oh, get in bed and calm yourself, McGee. Remember the old saying, late to bed and late to get up, and you'll feel all day like a poisoned pup.
At last. Boy, can I sleep now. Ah, I'm so tired, I... Wow.
4 o'clock, and we were going to bed at 8:30. Oh, well. Good night, McGee.
Good night.
McGee, somebody at the door.
Yeah, let's keep quiet. Maybe they'll go away.
I've got a better idea. Bring them in and let us go away.
Oh, all right, I'm coming. Ouch!
Did you kick that cedar chest again?
No, but I thought I was gonna.
Hello there, Johnny! Telegram for you. Sign here.
What's the idea of bringing this so early in the morning, old-timer?
You mean you kids ain't up yet, Johnny? What you gonna do, sleep all the forenoon?
Why, you old...
You ought to get to bed earlier. Why, you're just a grown boy and you need your sleep. Don't forget, an hour's sleep before midnight is worth
more... That ratted, I know that. I started to go to bed at 8:30. If it hadn't been for a bunch of jugheads like you hammering at my door all night, I'd have been in bed.
Easy there, Johnny. Easy. Don't take that tone of voice with me. I'm sensitive.
Yeah. You're sensitive, all right. Like a violet. And confidentially, you shrink.
Johnny, but that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it.
I don't care how you heard it. Good night. That takes care of that old fossil.
What was it, dearie?
Ah, it's a telegram.
Who from?
I don't know. I ain't opened it yet. Wait till I get back in bed. I'm cold.
Albia.
What is it?
Why, it's from our sponsor.
What's he say?
He says, "Dear Fibber and Molly, your last two or three shows have sounded very tired. Why don't you try getting a good night's sleep?"
Yeah. Oh, Piggy, what are you doing?
I'm kicking that cedar chair. Yeah.
Fibber and Molly will be back in just a moment. And now here are the simple directions for keeping linoleum floors clean and beautiful. Spread a little Johnson's self-polishing glow coat lightly over the floor surface. This amazing liquid polish is so easy to use, goes on so smoothly, that a child can apply it without any difficulty. Glow coat never streaks or smears, never becomes gummy. It dries in 20 minutes, becomes a sparkling, gleaming surface without any rubbing or buffing. The floor that wears a glow coat polish is protected from the wear of scuffing feet. Dirt and stains can't cling to the shining surface. If you want to save yourself hours of work and also make your linoleum last longer, order Johnson's Glow Coat from your dealer. Look for the attractive yellow can. And remember, you save money on the larger sizes.
Must be morning. I just heard a rooster crowing.
That wasn't a real rooster.
It wasn't?
No.
What was it?
This has been such a wonderful evening, Pathé News is making a picture of it.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
Hello.
Hiya, new car?
No, car new. It does look new, though, doesn't it? All this Johnson's Car New Auto Polish is really something. Actually cleans and wax polishes a car at the same time. One operation, half the time it used to take. No more dirty cars for me. Why don't you buy a can of Johnson's Car New and wax polish your car this easy way? Here's how it's spelled. C-A-R-N-U. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That guy spelled it N-U instead of N-E-W. Boy, I didn't know how to spell back then in 1941. Car New. C-A-R-N-U.
N-U. That's how it should be.
Gosh.
Gosh, Carl.
It's N-E-W. I even know that.
Is that true? I kind of like N-U.
Well, you know, when I was in college, Lisa, I studied to be an astronaut.
I know.
You know?
You don't have to say it. We have all heard it.
What, that I took up space?
Ba-dum-ish.
All right. Fibber McGee and Molly from the February 18th, 1941, Early to Bed, starring Jim and Marianne Jordan. Harlow Wilcox, and we started that whole movement to get people to start naming their newborns Harlow. Could be a
like
girl.
Like you said, I think it's a great girl's name.
Great. Well, remember Jean Harlow, but that was the last name.
Yeah,
but
that's
Harlow could
that's
be a girl,
great name.
Could be a boy. Yeah.
You know, if I were going to have another baby, at the age of 70, it might be difficult. But if I were, I'm going to keep that in mind.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Fibber McGee and Molly, hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. More here on the WGN Radio Theater after these words. Okay. Hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. Program 154 in the series. I'm still thinking about that chocolate cake at Ritz-Carlton. Oh, man.
Well, yeah.
Yep. Gosh. I think we
you
should
know
become...
What? It's dangerous because at 1 in the morning, you get the munchies. I mean, we
I
always get hungry
I've
when we're
I've put on
here.
Like 15 pounds since I've been doing this show in 2 years. I'll bet you. I'll bet you I
don't
have.
Think so.
Yeah, I do.
Well, it is really difficult to not. I know we had an apple tonight, and that about covered it, but
yeah.
It's tough to not eat late at night.
I know. If I was sleeping right now, I wouldn't know I was hungry.
That's exactly right.
But I'm up.
I know, me too.
At least when...
Me three.
See?
Yeah.
Right?
Right, I get hungry.
I know.
Then you go to the vending machine, there's nothing in there. There's just like...
Well, there's
candy and junk food. Can't eat that.
I know. There's no...
So...
There's nothing good.
I just... hungry, so I think I'll just go to Ritz-Carlton
and get a cake while you're there.
Eat it on my way home.
That's a great plan.
Eat the whole cake.
Go through the McDonald's drive-thru.
Probably one slice of that cake is probably 1,000 calories.
Absolutely.
You know?
I do not mind. I don't mind at all.
Well, I mean, you can afford
that cake.
It. I can't.
Some people are young and have fast metabolisms.
Yeah. Some people are 70.
Some people are 70. Yeah.
Okay, that's the joke of the night, you guys. I just want you to know that.
By the way, Lisa's nowhere near 70.
I shouldn't say. I don't want
someone here.
There was someone at the radio station
that thought she was 70.
For some reason, he thought I was turning 70 this year, and I just went with it. And I said, yep, I'm going to have that big 7-0 this year. And he's like, wow, you look really good. And I went,
and this
well, thank you.
Happened a few days ago,
this
and
was
she's
yesterday.
Obsessing
no, this
over
was
it.
Last night, and I said, "Well, thanks. I take care of myself,
and
I work out every day."
Talking about
and
it.
It's still bothering me that he thinks that I'm actually turning 70.
She called me like 11 times.
70.
Well, hold on. Can I clear the air on something?
Yes, please.
That was not his own. That wasn't his own thought.
But he believed it. He's like, "Wow, you're turning 70." Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it took him like. A couple double takes before he accepted it.
I think he was okay with it.
I actually think he thought you were looking young.
Young for 70, yeah. I looked at least maybe 66, 67. I don't know.
You don't even look near that.
Okay, well, that's the joke of the night. So,
Lisa, you
I'll get
look
over
a
it eventually.
Day over 21.
I'll get over it.
That's why wherever we go, you always get carded all the time, right?
Well, we just posted a new cover photo with Carl. And Mike and Aleph and me.
Oh.
So you can check us all out.
And you're the one with a cane.
WGN Radio Theater Facebook. Yes, I'm the one hunched
over. With the walker.
Trying to stand straight.
All right.
That's not even funny.
We're here every Saturday and Sunday night with Classic Radio, 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. It's called a reset. That's what you do on radio.
Is that right?
Radio reset.
All right.
The WGN Radio Theater. Want to remind all of our listeners, don't miss. We're on the air 6 hours, and we play 6 classic radio shows every week. And in this hour, it's Gangbusters, brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actor plays a former criminal in the upcoming action film The Fate of the Furious, the 8th installment in the Fast and Furious franchise.
All right, what do they win?
They are going to win a pair of tickets to see the Apollo Chorus of Chicago this Saturday, February 25th. Oh, that's not this Saturday. On Saturday, February 25th. That's another, I guess that's 2 weeks from today. Yeah, close.
Pretty good.
Okay.
All right. 312-981. Are you tired?
No, I'm good.
312-981-7200. And here's a hint. This actor was the star of Riddick.
How do I get eyes like that?
You gotta kill a few people.
Yeah.
There you have it.
Gotta kill a few people.
Oh, Carl.
Yeah. Gotta kill a few people.
You might want to clarify that it's the male voice that we're looking
definitely.
For.
Definitely.
Want to kill a few people.
That one.
And he's in the Fast and the Furious movies, too.
I think that gives it away right there.
And he was in that really funny movie where he was a babysitter. Remember that one?
I didn't see that one.
That's good. All right. 312-981-7200. Who is that actor? We'll be right back.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. So we're playing Celebrity Scoop, and we played a clip, and we're going to play that clip one more time.
How do I get eyes like that?
You got to kill a few people.
Yeah, you gotta kill a few people.
Well, let's see if Dean knows who that is. He's from Genoa City. Hi, Dean.
Hey, how come nobody's asking me if I'm ready?
Yeah, that's right. Are you ready?
Dean, are you ready?
Let me check. Give me a second. Yes, I'm ready.
All right. How long have you been ready for, though? That's the question.
Dean can do this show with us. Dean, you should come down here and do the show with us, man.
I like your
style.
With me, you mean.
I like.
No idea how much I'd love to sit across from that. Yep,
I can tell, Dean. You've done some entertainment. You've done some radio, some TV. I can just tell.
know, but people have told me that I've had the radio voice.
Telling you,
I,
you know what? It's not just the voice, it's the confidence.
10 seconds, I knew that he could do this.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
and I need
put
a break.
Your money.
Believe
Carl?
Me, Dean, I need a break from Lisa.
I'm there. I am there anytime you need it, buddy.
All right.
Carl, Lisa,
stay in touch with me.
Carl,
Lisa?
Yes.
Ruff.
Right. I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to say put your money where your mouth is, Carl.
Uh-huh.
Right? Don't just be a joker. So, Dean, who is that actor?
I am going to guess it's Vin Diesel.
It is Vin Diesel. And you know what? You've won a pair of tickets to see the Apollo Chorus of Chicago. It's one of the most legendary musical organizations. They're going to perform on Saturday, February 25th at the Wentz Concert Hall in Naperville. You get two tickets. And for more information, you go to brownpapertickets.com. But I'm going to do you one better, Dean. I'm
all
going
right.
to also, what goes great with a show?
Yeah.
I'm thinking if it's not Twilight Zone CDs, it's got to be pizza.
It's a pizza, my favorite. Lou Malnati's gift certificate, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnati's.com. It's $25 for you. So we hope you enjoy both of those things.
I most certainly will. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you weren't married, I'd be asking you, but it sounds like we're going to be co-workers here shortly.
it's a date.
Take
Thank
care, Dean.
You.
All right, buddy. Enjoy that. All right. Explore Chicago's culinary side with Chicago Tribune's food and dining newsletter. Sign up today at chicagotribune.com/newsletters and live deliciously.
Oh, that's the way to live.
Yeah, absolutely.
Deliciously.
All right. Are you ready for gangbusters, Lisa?
Yes, I am.
As I mentioned earlier, these were true crime cases. It was a show created by Phillips H. Lord in 1935. It was known as the only national program that brings you authentic police case histories. It was dramatized closed cases of crimes, and it had the blessing of Bureau Director J. Edgar Hoover. And it was the loudest show on radio. Loud sound effects, shrill police sirens, marching convicts, machine guns firing, all kinds of stuff. It aired until 1957. That's a long time.
Yeah, that's pretty
35 late. 35 to 57. Oh,
yeah.
It also was on television for a short time in 1952, hosted by Chester Morris. And did you know that Chester Morris played Boston Blackie in the movies? Did you know that?
And you're not a Boston Blackie fan.
No, not at all. Fan. All right, it's time now for Gangbusters. This is called The Case of the Quincy Killers. It's from April 24th, 1948, part one of Gangbusters.
Now, Gangbusters, presented in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States. The only national program that brings you authentic police case histories.
Tonight, Gangbusters presents The Case of the Quincy Killers. But didn't know that a railroad ticket in the hands of alert detectives could be a one-way ticket to the gallows.
Gangbusters has asked the Honorable Peter F. Hartman, former Chief of Police, Quincy, Illinois, to narrate by proxy tonight's case. Now, Chief Hartman, before we begin, I'd like to remind our listeners about a special feature at the end of tonight's program. It shows how a girl of 12... and a boy of 14 helped capture a dangerous kidnapper.
I'm quite anxious to hear that myself, Don Gardner.
Well, Chief Hartman, let's get to tonight's case.
Well, Don, it's not very often that a situation such as this arises in society. I've been a police officer myself for 23 years, and this was the first time I ever ran into anything like this case.
Well, why don't you start right in, Chief Hartman?
All right, Don. Let's begin in the city of Quincy, Illinois, one spring evening a few years ago. In a small two-story frame house near the International Shoe Company factory, a man sat on the living room sofa. He was there calling on Mrs. Angela Brooks Stover, already twice widowed. Angela was seated at the old melodeon, and the music coming forth seemed to be a hymn.
What?
Don't you know anything except church music?
It's music, isn't it?
I learned it when I was a child, and I've never learned nothing since.
Well, you ain't a child now.
My husband's liked my playing. Both of them.
Is that what killed them?
Will Heinze. I'm never going to invite you back for another evening.
Don't then.
Will. Huh? I baked a cake this afternoon.
What kind of cake?
Chocolate, with white inside.
Well, let's have some.
You know, I baked every day for both my husbands.
Is that so?
Every day.
Now, look, Angie, you're not hooking me for number three, so if you're going to make hints, good night.
Will, what's the matter with us getting married? Is there something about me you don't like?
No, Angie, it ain't that. But...
certainly time he was getting married.
Well, it's my father. There'd be nobody to look after him.
Since when's he sick in bed? Look after himself. It's you that's clinging to him.
Now, wait a minute. I can take care of myself.
If you didn't have that old goat to drag around with you, maybe you'd get someplace in this world.
Pop is plenty smart. He's smart enough for me to listen to.
You're just scared of him, that's all. Like any minute he was going to take you out in the woodshed. Like you were still running around in knee pants.
That ain't so, Angie. You got more company?
No.
Well, who are you expecting?
Nobody. I don't think anybody.
Well, don't stand there. See who it is.
All right. Yes, what? Oh, Mr. Heinze.
Yes, Mr. Heinze.
Will, it's your father.
I guess Will knows me when he sees me.
But won't you come in, Mr. Heinze? I was just about to serve chocolate cake.
Well, I like chocolate cake. Maybe it's good. Will, I want to talk to you.
Angie makes good chocolate cake, huh?
The best. And I got some coffee up.
Well, then go get it. Don't stand here talking about it. The eating is the proof of the pudding.
All right. Make yourself at home, Mr. Heinze.
I will.
Well, what's the matter, Pop?
Will, if I was a younger man, I'd take a stick and pound some sense into your head. Sit down.
Oh, Pop, I don't really mean to marry Angie.
Angie, huh? There was two policemen around the house looking for you. They said Klinger's hardware store was broken into, and they think you did it. Now, did you?
Pop,
I... Did you?
Well, yeah.
All these years I've been teaching you, all these years I've been trying to make a man out of you.
I'm sorry,
Pop. Too late to be sorry. Got no respect for your father. Why don't you at least wait until I'm in my grave?
Pop, don't talk like that.
Breaking into hardware stores. How many times have I got to tell you not to break into anything? Unless I say so.
It looks so easy.
It looks so easy. Now you're in trouble. Every time we got in trouble, every time it's been on account of you running off and doing something like that.
Oh, Pop.
If it hadn't been for you, we wouldn't have spent that time in the Missouri State Prison. And that 5 years in Iowa... You're not much better than a child.
Shh, Pop, I told you I was sorry.
Being sorry is not going to chase them two detectives away from the house there. They're waiting for you.
Uh-oh.
I tell you, it's lucky for you your father has a good mouth on him. I told them I'd go out and find you, bring you to the police station.
Oh, no, Pop, you're not.
Well, I sure ought to.
Yeah, but you ain't, Pop.
It's just lucky, Will, that you're my flesh and blood. It's just lucky for you.
Well, what are we going to do, Pop?
Now, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do some traveling again. To a resort. To Spirit Lake.
Spirit Lake? Where's that?
It's up in Iowa near the Minnesota line. I saw an ad in the paper. The people that runs the cottages there need a couple of handymen.
Handymen? We're not going to work, Pop.
Just long enough to get a good look around the resort. Now, we leave tonight.
Spend all day chopping wood just so somebody can burn it up.
Will?
Fine job we got.
Will?
What, Pop?
Put that axe up, Will. Mrs. Miller says dinner's on the table.
It's about time. Where have you been all day?
What's eating you, Will? A little work never hurt nobody.
It can't hurt you. You never do anything.
Will, you have some respect.
Well, I thought you said we'd only be around here long enough to find out where they keep their money. I thought you
don't
told me...
Don't think so much. Now, come on inside.
You know, the first guests will be coming soon, Pop. When the cottages get rented up, it'll be tougher and tougher to do what we gotta do.
You just leave all that to me. I'll tell you when.
We can handle the Millers, all right. They won't be no trouble.
Wipe your feet off.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Here,
Come in. It's on the table.
Thank you, Mrs. Miller.
We got lamb stew. It's getting cold.
Lamb stew sounds pretty good, don't it, Pop?
Yeah, it's awful good. Don't you think you ought to wash your hands, Will?
Oh, yeah, Pop. Excuse me. I'll be right back.
Sit down, Pop.
Thank you, Mrs. Miller.
Sometimes Will calls you Pop as if you were really his Pop.
Well, I guess it's natural him not having a father and a together so long. My, everything sure looks good.
And help yourself.
Ain't Mr. Miller going to eat with us?
Oh, Mr. Miller went to town. He went to arrange for the bus. First guests are coming tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Well, it's kind of early, ain't it? Nights are still pretty cold for vacationing.
Oh, we get lots of early guests. Oh, now take some more of that stew, Pop. That little bit isn't going to hold you till supper.
Well, I'm all washed up.
There, sit down, Will. Oh, and help yourself.
Thanks, Miss Miller. Oh, that lamb stew looks awful good.
It is good, Will. Will, the first guests are arriving tomorrow.
Oh, no kidding.
That's right. We're in for some real excitement.
Yeah, I guess we are.
Oh, that must be Mr. Miller calling from town. Excuse me, I'll get it. Help yourself to everything. Don't be bashful.
Say, this lamb stew is good, Pop.
Hang the lamb stew.
Well, it's good. Mrs. Miller's a good cook.
Guests coming early ruin everything.
What can we do about it? They're coming.
I tell you what we can do. We can finish our business tonight.
Tonight?
That's what I said.
Yeah, but we don't know where Mr. Miller keeps all the money.
Well, we'll find it.
But how are we going to have time to find it with them around?
That's easy. We kill him.
Kill him?
Yeah.
Oh, now, Pop, that ain't good.
Now, you look here. Did I ever put you wrong yet, Will? The only times we've been in trouble is when you did something on your own. That's the only times.
Yeah, but do we have to kill him?
If we're going to find out what we want, yes.
When?
Tonight. After supper. In the parlor.
But, Pop...
Will, I made up my mind.
Okay, if you made up your mind.
You're right, Will. Mrs. Miller does make good lamb stew. Very good lamb stew.
So, Don, if the afternoon seemed like an eternity to Philip and William Heinze as they waited their moment, the events that night must have seemed to occur in a split second. But sometimes split seconds are remembered better than eternities by murderers and their pursuers.
All right, there's the first portion of Gangbusters with the case of the Quincy Killers starring William Zuckert. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. First, these words. Thank you, Esmeralda. Thank you, Roger. It is 1:37 in the morning. Thanks for staying up with us on the WGN Radio Theater. Nick DiGilio's coming up at 2 o'clock in the morning. He has movie reviews. And talk about the Lego Batman movie.
Yes, he will.
And he's also going to talk about John Wick, the sequel to John Wick. Thankfully, he's not going to be talking about 50 Shades of Grey or whatever it's called.
Darker. 50 Shades Darker. So are you going to head out and see that for Valentine's Day, Carl?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Nah.
Yeah, it's not on my list.
Not my type of movie, really.
You know what? It's not mine either. What about you, Elif? Is that on your list of things to do?
No. No. Not at all. That's a waste of money
and time. I took my daughter, Rachel. She's 14, and she loves horror.
You took her to 50 Shades Darker?
No. Not that. No. I was going to say, I took her to a movie this weekend, and she loves horror movies. Like, mm-hmm. The scarier, the better. She's just...
She loves scary movies.
And do you remember the movie The Ring?
Oh, of course.
That movie scared me so much that I did not want to walk to my car. But this was like 10 years ago, 14 years, whatever year it came out. I remember being at the theater, seeing that movie, and afraid to walk to my car. That's how much it scared me. Well, they have a new movie. It's called Rings.
Oh.
And I thought, it's going to be, because it's the same,
right?
concept.
Right.
It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. It was like one of the worst movies
I've
ever seen.
Was it a horror movie?
Yeah, but it wasn't scary. It wasn't good. It was slow. It wasn't interesting.
The last horror movie
I saw.
Wasn't
at all interesting.
What was that movie where there's 24 hours and nobody could get arrested for any crimes?
Oh, yeah,
and then
yeah,
the
yeah,
lockdown
yeah, yeah,
in the house, but then the people got in.
The Purge, right?
The Purge. That's the one I saw. God, that was good. That was scary.
Yeah, I saw that. I like that. That was pretty good. But I was really disappointed because I thought, you know, The Ring... Such
Sounds
a scary
like,
yeah movie.
Yeah.
But
did
no.
Rachel like it?
No.
No.
She didn't like it at all.
All right. So you'll take her to 50 Shades Darker this week.
Not my 14-year-old. I don't think so. All right. It's time for the conclusion to Gangbusters.
Now back to Gangbusters. You were telling us, Chief Hartman, that the criminals, Philip and William Heinze, father and son, planned to murder and rob their employers, Mr. and Mrs. Miller, operators of a lakeside resort in northern Iowa.
That's right, Don. And that night after supper, the two criminals were in the kitchen about to enter the parlor where, as usual, they were invited by the Millers to spend the evening.
You do like I told you and we'll come out all right.
Oh, but, Pop, do we have to kill them?
I told you we did. You just watch me for signal.
Good evening, Mrs. Miller.
Oh,
Miller.
Good evening. Have a chair.
Thank you. We will.
How did it go in town today, Mr. Miller?
Fine, Will. Just fine.
Are you finished with the sports section, Mr. Miller?
Yes, sir. It is on the couch.
Oh, thank you.
Big rainstorm in Chicago, it says.
Is that so, Mr. Miller?
Yes, it... Oh, where'd you get that gun?
I'm going to use it to kill you, Mr. Miller.
What?
No!
You old fool!
Take care of her.
You maniac!
Take care of her, I said.
You crazy fool!
Quiet!
Hit her again. Now, here, shoot her.
Oh, no, Pop, you do it.
Oh, I have to do everything. All your life I've been doing things for you. Now, here, you shoot her yourself. Go on, shoot her.
Pop,
I said shoot her.
And she might still be lying out there, her unconscious and Mr. Miller's body, if the bus driver hadn't come by with the guests.
I think we've got a case, Sheriff.
Well, this is Cousin's furniture store here. Oh, before we go in, besides being the leading furniture merchant and undertaker, Mr. Cousins is also coroner of the county. He'll probably want to talk to us about holding the inquest.
I understand.
Well, let's go on in. Afternoon, John.
Afternoon, Sheriff.
Mr. John Cousins, this is Agent Ike Welburn of the Iowa Bureau of Investigation. He came out from Des Moines to help with the case.
Ah, glad to have you. We got a mystery on our hands. Sit down here in your place. It's all secondhand stuff.
Thanks. I hope I can help you solve that mystery.
Well, corpus delicti is back in the undertaking department. How's Mrs. Miller?
Well, the doctors give her a 50-50 chance, John.
Mm.
We got the slugs out of Mr. Miller's body. Looks like they came out of a .32.
Both of them. We'll send them down to the laboratory in Des Moines for a complete ballistics check. What about these two men, the suspects?
Well, the only time they were seen in town was the day they got off the train.
When was that?
Oh, 10 days, 2 weeks ago. They asked Chet North, the station agent, for directions to the Miller's place. Chet phoned out, and Miller drove in for him.
I guess Mrs. Miller could give you more information about them than anyone else.
Well, apparently Mrs. Miller won't be able to give that information for a while.
If at all.
If they'd already been hired by the Millers, must have been some correspondence between them.
Well, my men certainly couldn't find anything. No payroll book, nothing.
Nothing at all.
You know, it's strange how the young one and the old one seem to travel together. Mr. Miller was talking about them at the feed store one day. He had an idea they were some kin, but he never asked.
Wasn't the nosy kind, as long as they did their work.
They did their work, all right. Come on, Sheriff, let's walk over to the depot and talk to that station agent. I want to see if I can make certain of the exact day they got off the train.
Just a minute. Yes? Who is it?
It's me, Angie. Will.
Will? Will, where have you been? Where'd you disappear to for 3 weeks?
Oh, Pop decided we should take a little trip.
And you go away without telling me.
Well, ain't you going to invite me in?
Come in, Will.
Much obliged, Angie.
Now, tell me, was that nice what you did to me?
No, Angie, it wasn't, Angie.
I don't know whether I even ought to ask you to stay.
Angie, I'm through listening to my Pop.
Oh.
I'm going to start doing things on my own.
It's about time.
Oh, more than about time.
Will, just by coincidence, I made a chocolate cake today.
You did?
Would you like some?
Later. But right now, would you play one of those hymns for me?
A hymn?
Yeah, a hymn.
Well, sure, Will. If you want.
Angie.
Yes?
Sometime in the near future, would you care to marry me?
Oh, Will, I don't know what to say.
Well, say what you said to the two before me. Say yes.
Yes, Will. Yes.
Oh, come to the church in the wild wood.
Oh, come to the church in the
One of these phones would be best to put the call through on, Sheriff.
Yeah, you can tie this one up as long as you want, Welburn.
Thanks.
Yes, please.
Operator, I want to place a call to the chief auditor, Rock Island Railroad, Chicago, Illinois.
Yes, sir. I'll call you back.
Thanks.
It looks pretty hopeless to me, Welburn. The railroad takes up thousands of tickets every day.
I know they do, but each one of them is handled and audited individually. Now, if we can trace the ones these two men used for their passage to Spirit Lake, we might know where they came from. That's a big step in the investigation.
No, I grant you that, but suppose they change trains at Des Moines or someplace. Then where are we?
If they bought their tickets through to Spirit Lake when they left home, it doesn't make any difference how many times they change. The stamp of the originating office is on the back. If the railroad can locate those tickets, we've got a chance.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe you've got something.
Sheriff, it's all we've got.
Where have you been, Will? You had me worried. The Quincy cops might still be looking for you on account of that hardware store.
Just over to see Angie.
But I thought I told you to stay away from her. She's been widowed twice and proposes to make you number three.
I asked her to marry me, Pop.
You what?
Angie and I are going to get married.
You won't marry her as long as I'm alive.
I ain't listening to you no more, Pop. You got me in trouble all my life listening to you. Steal this, steal
you
that.
Will.
Turn me loose, Pop.
You're my boy. You'll do what I say.
Turn me loose.
Will. Push your poor old father, who's been nothing but good to you all your life.
Oh, good to me? That's a laugh. Making me spend years and years in jail, making me steal and kill.
You wouldn't have known what to do if it weren't for me. You wouldn't have known nothing.
I wouldn't have killed nobody.
You didn't even do a good job at that. I told you to kill her. You messed it up. You never did anything right.
I can kill, Pop, if I want to. Angie and me are getting married, and if you step one foot in the way, I'll kill you. I swear I'll kill you.
Agent Welburn.
Mr. Welburn, Detective Watson, the Quincy, Illinois Police Department is ready to talk now.
Well, good. Put him on.
Hello, Welburn.
Yes, Watson. How are you?
Okay. I've been thinking about our phone conversation last night.
Any ideas, Watson?
You say those two definitely bought their railroad tickets here in Quincy.
That's what the railroad says.
Well, I don't want to make any promises, Welburn. Maybe I know the men you're looking for. Father and a son.
That could be.
The name's Heinze. We've suspected them at a couple of burglaries around here. They disappeared about 3 weeks ago. But I could start checking around for them.
It's a good idea, Watson. You start checking and I'll start driving. And I'll see you there as quick as I can make it.
Come to the church in the vale. No place is so dear to my child.
I never heard such pretty music.
Pop.
Evening, Mr. Heinze.
You get your hat, Will. We're going.
How did you get in here?
I got a knack of getting places, Will. You know that. You get your hat.
Go on, Angie. Finish playing.
But Will, I...
Finish playing.
Will, tell him to go home. I can't stand the sight of
you. You're coming with me, Will.
No more. You're not telling me what to do.
Will.
You stupid old
fire. Stay away from me, Pop.
Will.
Put that gun up.
Stay away, and you too, Angie.
Oh, Will.
Shut up, Angie. All these years, I've been taking lessons from you, Pop. So right now, I'm going to show you what I learned.
Well, you wouldn't shoot your own father now. Not after all we've been to each other.
You've never been anything to me. All my life, I've been scared of you. Now I'm not scared no more.
Will, don't shoot
him. Get some sense, boy.
I'm just beginning to get some sense, boy. Sit down, Pop. I'm going to shoot you just like you shot Mr. Miller.
Will, my boy.
Sit down.
Will, don't do this, please.
Hey.
Police officers, don't move.
Yeah, well,
don't move. Got a half a dozen guns on you.
Oh, Will.
You lady, open the door.
Don't do it, Angie.
Open the door.
All right.
One side. That's it. Just keep your hands up.
Hey, he's my son, officer. We were only joking.
I was neither joking.
If there's any humor in this situation, it's beyond me. And you won't think it's so funny either when you face the judge and the jury.
That, Don, was how this strange pair of killers, father and son, were apprehended. They were returned to Iowa, where they were found guilty of murder in the first degree. On March 29th, 1946... Philip and William Heinze paid the extreme penalty for their crime on the gallows at Fort Madison State Penitentiary.
Well, thank you, Chief Hartman, for this most unusual case history. And gangbusters, congratulations to all the police officers whose brilliant investigation brought this pair to justice. Now, as a special feature, Gangbusters presents an interview with the two young listeners who were responsible for the apprehension of the dangerous kidnapper, John Harvey Bugg, whom they recognize from the description given on a gangbuster's clue. Here they are from the studios of KEX, ABC's new 50,000-watt outlet in Portland, Oregon.
Hello, I'm Pauline Virgin, age 12. I'm a Girl Scout.
And I'm Navar Smith, 14, Andy Boy Scout.
Well, Pauline and Navar, you've had quite an exciting week. And now you're on Gangbusters. Why don't you just go ahead and tell all these millions of people just how it happened?
All right, Mr. Hunter. You see, we live in Gerhardt, Oregon, and everybody...
Gerhardt's about 80 miles from Portland. Isn't that right, Pauline?
Yes, sir. Well, you see, I took riding lessons from Cowboy Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And, Saturday night when I was listening to Gangbusters, I heard the description of him. And it said that he had the limp and the tape on his fingers.
Mm-hmm. What was the description that they gave in Gangbusters? Did they say he had his fingers taped?
Yes, he did.
Oh, I see. And then this Cowboy Jim had his fingers taped, too. Mm-hmm. Well, you were pretty suspicious then, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Well, what did you do about it?
Well, I told my cousin Navar Smith.
Oh, I see. Navar, how did you feel about this whole thing?
Well, I thought if the FBI wanted this kidnapper, that the best thing to do is to turn him in. I went over to Seaside and turned him in to the policeman there.
You turned the kidnapper in?
No, I asked him where I could get in touch with the FBI, but...
Oh, I see.
He asked me why, and I told him, and so he says that he would do it for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you talk to your mother about it, Pauline, at all?
Yes, I did, and she kind of laughed.
Oh, I see. Well, you didn't let that bother you at all, though, did you?
No.
Well, you say the policeman now was going to do what for you?
He was going to turn him into the FBI for us.
Well, I see, and he certainly did from all the activity we've seen around here in the last week. Agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation did some checking, and they found out that Cowboy Jim really was the kidnapper, John Harvey Bugg. And they found him hiding under the baby crib in a friend's house last Friday night. Tell me something, Pauline. What did your mother say after it was all over?
Well, she was kind of thrilled about it. She didn't think it could happen.
Well, she kind of admitted, too, that kids can be right sometimes,
yeah.
Didn't she? Well, you and Navar certainly were right, and observant, too. And now, on behalf of Gangbusters, I want to present each of you with a check for $100.
Oh, boy.
And we hope you'll continue to be observant young citizens.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter.
Thank you.
Now, this is Ben Hunter, transcribed from the studios of KEX Portland, Oregon, switching you back to Gangbusters in New York.
Thank you, Pauline Virgin and Navar Smith. And Gangbusters, congratulations to both of you. Tonight's case was dramatized by Stanley Niss and directed by Ted Corday, with Bill Smith and Bill Zuckert in leading roles. Don Gardner speaking. Gangbusters is a Phillips H. Lord production.
There you have it. Gangbusters, April 24th, 1948, with a case of the Quincy Killers starring Bill Smith and Bill Zuckert, and heard on ABC. Hope you enjoyed Gangbusters. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Next week, when we come back here, it is more classic radio, right, Lisa?
Yes. On Saturday night, we have The Shadow, My Favorite Husband, and This Is Your FBI. On Sunday, I have chosen Suspense, Father Knows Best, and Under Arrest, as Carl says, a police drama. Right.
Underarm. Under what?
Under Arrest.
Use some deodorant for that underarm. I mean, Under Arrest.
Yeah.
All right. So Nick DiGilio is in the house. What's up, Nick? How are you? What's up, buddy?
All right.
So, we were talking, Nick came in here and I just said, boy, I wish I would have heard when you talked about The Rings. That was just a bad movie. Gosh, terrible movie.
Yeah.
My daughter was so excited to see it because she really liked the first one. You know, she loves scary movies.
Mm-hmm.
And the first Ring, to me, I thought was great. I loved it. And I was really looking forward to this. This is, I think, the third in the series.
Third one, yeah.
Yeah.
Third one in the American series.
Right.
Because
right.
The Japanese original, there were three of those, I think.
Yeah.
Or four.
The first one with Naomi Watts. She might have been in the second one, too. I'm not sure.
But she's in both
first,
of them,
yeah. She's not in this one.
No.
And I can see why. She was probably like, nah.
Yeah,
not
she shouldn't
that.
Have been in the second one either.
Yeah, so. I know. So what's on for the show this morning?
Well, movies. It's Monday morning. We always review movies.
Talk about the Lego movie, right?
The Lego Batman movie, yes. Yeah. We will review that. We will review... I haven't seen it, but the guys can review that 50 Shades of Crap movie. And John Wick Chapter 2.
Okay.